Case number 24-1384, et al., Preferred Building Services, Inc., petitioner versus National Labor Relations Board. Mr. Pakeville for the petitioner, Mr. Heller for the respondent, Ms. Johnson, you're needed for respondent.
Good afternoon. Thank you for your patience.
Thank you.
Cases today.
Good afternoon, Your Honors. May it please the court, Tyler Pateko for the petitioner, Preferred Building Services. And I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, if I could. Thank you. So this appeal concerns the denial of constitutional due process rights. As the board and all parties agree, including the intervener, SEIU, if the picketers, they're sometimes called alleged discriminatees, if they were engaged in either recognitional picketing or secondary picketing, they lose the protection of the act. Everybody agrees.
Is that a constitutional issue?
Well, the exclusion of evidence is what I'm getting to, is the constitutional issue. So in this case, that principle was violated very early, 11 years ago at the trial. I was there. The judge, you give trial estimates. It's just like a federal trial. Federal rules of evidence apply. About the sixth day, we made a motion. Hey, the general counsel has taken way more than their allotted time. Their time estimate was 4 days. And the next morning we showed up and the judge issued sua sponte an order striking all of my client's affirmative defenses. Not only that, preventing my client from presenting any evidence into support of those affirmative defenses. The first board got a limited record, and they found even on that limited record, there was sufficient evidence of secondary picketing, that is pressuring a neutral and meshing a neutral in the primary employer's dispute. That's unlawful, that's unprotected conduct. That was on an incomplete record. Unfortunately, that error, which is admitted, infected the proceedings all the way through, including in the Ninth Circuit, because in the Ninth Circuit looked at the board's decision and said there was insufficient evidence of secondary motive by the union and the picketing, but they had an incomplete record at that point. In fact, the evidence that was excluded by the ALJ would have shown the secondary picketing motive, because just like in the general maintenance case, 1999 decision by the board, there were trashing incidents at the Millennium Tower. That's a skyscraper in San Francisco. It's actually sinking, but it has very prominent tenants. One of the best quarterbacks ever, Joe Montana. They come in on Christmas Eve and throw coal into the lobby. They fight with a security guard. The San Francisco Police Department is called. They show up and they fill out a report. There was injuries at the picket line. That's exactly the kind of evidence, Your Honors, that was at issue in general maintenance.
So I guess to sort of move the camera forward a little bit, we're reviewing the board decision in round two here.
Yes, understood.
Board decision. Yeah. And that board decision said, we will take as given your evidence, even accepting your evidence. We will take it.
Right.
It doesn't show secondary picketing because it occurred after the unfair labor practices at issue.
So
your evidence got in. You provided that evidence. It was considered by the board. We can see it too. And they said,
right.
Post hoc rationale.
Right. Understood. Good. Excellent question, Your Honor. So the Ozark case, this court taught us that an offer of proof is not a substitute for live testimony. It's not cross-examination. I'm a trial lawyer, not really an appellate lawyer, and I love a good fight. I just don't like to fight with two hands tied behind my back, which is what happened.
Well, your trial lawyer, you know, your job is to make a proffer. Here's what we would have shown. Here's what we would have done.
Right.
And then when you come, we have sort of an equivalent rule here at the appellate level that you have to show prejudice. And your prejudice in your brief here is we wanted to put in the evidence about Millennium Tower and the trash throwing. And you don't say more that had we been allowed to cross-examine someone, we think they would have said, or you just said we wanted to be able to put in that evidence. And the board considered it. So you're not prejudiced when they consider it and they say, it doesn't matter. It was long after the unfair labor practices, and no amount of cross-examination is going to change the calendar.
I understand what the second board said. That's the reason for the appeal. So in that Ozark case, the court found an order barring a party from introducing relevant non-cumulative evidence is typically always prejudicial and reversible. And the same applies here. The court
it's
said—
It's not relevant is the point. It's not relevant if it post-states all of the unfair labor practices.
Well, okay.
How is it maybe that's where I'm not understanding things.
Right, right.
How is it relevant if it post-states—
So the recognitional picketing 8B7, if you picket for more than 30 days without filing a petition, it's unlawful. It's unprotected. The millennium was 57 days after the picketing started, so it's relevant to that 8B7.
I didn't understand. I thought your argument about your due process argument was as to the secondary picketing.
As to both, Your Honor. I mean, it's relevant to both. The secondary, it's relevant because, again, the picketing—
Did you tell the board that we want this Millennium Tower thing to be considered as part of the recognitional picketing?
We wanted and what we thought we would get is a remand to present evidence, live testimony, call the tenants, you know, that had calls thrown in their lobby and a security guard assaulted on Christmas Eve. That's what general maintenance said is relevant. We were prevented, actively prevented. My client's president, Bob Squeery, it's a family business, you know, this business he started. He said, started to testify after November 19, the union shut down 12 more sites. They picketed those sites as well. The judge cut them off. You can't go there. I'm not even going to let you go there. We were not allowed to present our evidence. That's why it's a due process issue.
So in your brief to this court, where do you argue your due process point about putting in evidence as the Millennium Incident as part of your argument about recognitional picketing?
Well, the recognitional picketing, it's relevant on its face. It's
I'm sorry, I asked you a question about where in your brief I can find this.
So,
you said you've argued it as to both, and I think I must have misunderstood something.
Well, it's relevant on its face. It's more than 30 days.
It needs to be raised in your brief on appeals.
It is argued in our brief that it's relevant to both recognitional and secondary.
You can tell me on rebuttal. I won't make you.
I'll find it.
You threw it right now. Yeah. You can do that on rebuttal.
So again, this court in Ozark not too long ago, 2015, there are sometimes errors at trial that deprive a litigant of the opportunity to present its version of the case. They are also ordinarily reversible since there is no way of evaluating whether or not the evidence affected the judgment. When, for example, an appellant has been deprived of the opportunity to summon witnesses, the appellate court—
You're not objecting to an inability to conduct discovery. You knew what the evidence was you wanted to put in, right?
That's correct. And
that was described in the proffer of evidence.
We tried to describe it in the proffer. Some of it, you know, until we talked to the witnesses and cross-examined the picketers— it's not even known what that's going to be. For example, the timing of the picketing on Christmas Eve at Millennium, whether that was after hours,
But it's a little bit like summary judgment. Summary judgment is not a due process violation, or, you know, even though you have to reduce evidence that, you know, in live form might be more or differently expressive. You have to, a proffer is like, you have to say what it is that you wanted to put in. And to the extent that it wasn't fully descriptive, I don't think that's a reason to reverse.
Well, we did describe the evidence.
Yeah. And the court said, yeah, okay, we hear it. We see that evidence. We accept it.
Right.
But if it were brought in, it wouldn't make a difference to us.
Yeah.
So the refusal of the evidence, I guess, isn't really a due process problem. It relates to some other legal error that you'd have to identify.
Well, again, I think it is legal error to deny the party an opportunity to call witnesses. And armed with the evidence that we should have had at trial to use cross-examination skills, Ozark says that, as experienced trial lawyers know, when a hostile witness realizes that an examining counsel has information bearing on the answers to counsel's question, the witness tends to be more candid. Here, there was the company was deprived of this incentive for truthful and complete testimony. In other words,
are you aware, what's your best case that your hope, and I will take as given that you're an effective examiner and cross-examiner, your hope that through the crucible of cross-examination, something would be disclosed that would undermine either the secondary or additional picking thing. That's just the hope that the process itself, you're not making a proffer as to that.
Right.
That itself is required by due process.
So I'm going to make
a legal error in any way. I don't understand that error, but require people to show how things are going to work out, not speculate as to process.
Understood. Understood. So I would make an analogy to an employment discrimination case. No employer is going to say, hey, we discriminated, right? We discriminated based on age. We terminated all the people with higher salaries, which correlates to age. So we have this burden shifting pretext, circumstantial evidence, the totality of evidence is considered. It's the same here. We're evaluating the unions, the picketers' motives, their subjective motives. Why were you picketing? Well, they said, why? We want a union. That's recognition, as Member Kaplan found, that was recognition in nature. But I wanted to point out that this issue of primary versus secondary is very nuanced. It's very, as the board has said, it's among the labor laws most intricate. It's based on the overall impression of what the parties were doing. And when you limit the evidence, it doesn't allow the fact finder to know what the totality of circumstances were.
I guess in this circumstances, but general maintenance relied upon was actually the absence of the employer from the site, right? That's one of the factors, the absence of the employer from the site. And you've made no proffer that Preferred Building Services was present on December 24th, working in the building. And you don't need cross-examination for that. You represent Preferred Building. And so without having made that proffer that you actually met the prongs of the recognitional picketing issue, so that information is entirely within your control.
Well, general,
is that not a problem?
So general maintenance considers a number of factors to go into evaluating, just like employment discrimination, circumstantial evidence. Did the employer have shifting reasons? Was there other evidence to suggest a bad motive?
I'm just asking a question, this one. Okay, general maintenance, in case you've invoked,
yeah,
went off on the fact that there was no evidence that the employer was present at the site, one of the required prongs for something to count as recognitional picketing. And your proffer nowhere mentions that Preferred Building was, in fact, present at the site on December 24th.
So
when this picketing happened.
So
you can't win without that showing, and you haven't made it.
That's not what general maintenance says. It's one factor among many.
Is it an optional one?
Because
of factors are all about, it's the site, they're at the site, this is the time when they'd be at the site.
Yeah,
that's pretty important.
That's all more dry dock, and in general maintenance, what the court focused on was the trashing.
I think the court, it's legal. I think this is what the board said here was that the employer wasn't there. You can't be right. The employer has to be there.
Well, that's a factor for the dry
But
there's many other factors that go into it, though. And concede Preferred was there. That was their building. They were cleaning. That was one of their contracts.
They had to be there at the time of the picket on December 24th.
And let's assume they were. I'm conceding that they were. You can't.
No, that they were not there.
They were there.
You don't get to concede that. You didn't proffer that.
No, I'm saying for purposes of argument, we were there.
No, not there. Let's assume they're not there.
Well, then again, it's that is evidence of secondary pressure if the employer was not there, the primary employer was not there. Mm-hmm. So it's one of the factors. I mean, general maintenance.
Sorry, I keep getting confused whether you're talking about the recognitional or secondary picketing issue. Yeah, I thought you were on recognitional. Okay.
I'm sorry, we're kind of skipping back and forth, but either one is a prohibited picketing, a prohibited objective.
Was this picket?
So there's a series of them, Your Honor.
The one on December 24th at Millennium Tower.
And that was all excluded. So October 29th, they started.
I'm asking just from your proffer, the evidence you wanted to get in, the evidence you asked the board to do a remand for.
Yeah,
it was. Time was on December 24th?
It was Christmas Eve. I don't know the exact time it was.
Morning, midday, afternoon, evening?
I think it was evening.
Evening, okay.
Yeah, I know that there was police were called. There's a police report that we were prepared to introduce. Sure. But
there was a security guard.
Yeah, there was
a security. No proffer that there was anybody in the building Christmas Eve evening other than the security.
Well, I mean, you're...
Is that...
I don't think our burden on appeals is to identify every scrap of evidence that we would have mustered and presented if we had been given the opportunity. When the judge said, you can't go there, I'm going to cut your witnesses off.
I'm going with where the board went. Okay, you went to the board. Board decides everything, reviews de novo. It can decide anything. It can decide facts de novo. So when you go to the board, you know this. You want to go up and tell them, here's what we weren't allowed to put in. We got to make a proffer.
Mm-hmm.
And if your proffer didn't include the things that made your proffer with the exclusion of that evidence legally relevant, then that's
so we did.
Then they're fine to say you haven't shown any prejudicial error.
Yeah, we didn't have witness declarations, for example. We were given a limited time to prepare a brief, a proffer, which we did. And we mentioned the police report.
I know, but a police report, what you didn't mention was. Was anybody in the building?
Well, the police were called to because there was violence on the picket line.
And a security guard, yes. That doesn't mean that there's other businesses in the building were there and were harassed. So
it's a 40. It's a 40 star
Christmas Eve evening.
Right. Right. So that there's no question the police were
40 floors, and you're not even going to know what's going on the ground floor. But
yeah,
I'm just getting to the point that you had an obligation to show things here. And you picked Millennium Towers, you picked the police report, but it doesn't seem to me that you were meeting sort of the legal prongs, and if you want to talk about secondary picketing or recognitional picketing, that you would have needed for the exclusion of that evidence to be prejudicial. But I guess, and I take it your argument is, well, we would get more information if allowed to go put it on before the ALJ. Is that your answer?
That in part, I mean, we would be allowed to cross-examine the picketers, for example, which we were prevented from. The evidence shows at Millennium, they threw coal into a residential building lobby at members of the building security team, causing physical injuries, resulting in a police report. The ALJ said that was not relevant. It's not, I'm going to exclude it. It was only by luck that we got that into the record because the judge excluded everything. We did include that in our
offer. By luck, it was you doing your job for the board, right?
Well, we did include that in our offer of proof. There was also testimony by the union that they visited about 20 sites where Preferred had cleaning contracts. That's at 1J80 and 1J102. Mr. Squeery, the president, testified that SEIU targeted at least a dozen other sites after November 19, and that Preferred lost contracts as a result of the picketing. It was coercive in nature. We didn't, to your point, Your Honor, we didn't go through and do pages and pages of what we would eventually introduce if given the opportunity. The first board's We made it so that we didn't have to go there. They decided just on the limited record there was sufficient evidence. And honestly, we thought we would at least have a hearing to be able to present the evidence that we were excluded to cross-examine their witnesses, armed with this evidence that we could use, clearly relevant, as the board found. Mm-hmm. And it was just the error infected the entire proceeting.
Thank you for a bit of your time. Do you have any questions? Any question? We'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor.
Good afternoon. May it please the court, Joel Heller for the National Labor Relations Board. Preferred does not dispute that it discharged, threatened, interrogated, and surveilled employees who were picketing to improve their working conditions. And substantial evidence supports the board's finding that Preferred failed to make out its affirmative defense that those employees were engaged in either secondary or recognitional picketing. So Preferred's primary argument on appeal is an evidentiary one. But there's two problems for Preferred in its argument that it should have had the opportunity to introduce additional evidence. As the court has been over already, one is that the board already considered the evidence, considered whether that evidence would have demonstrated a secondary impact, and determined that it would not, so there's no prejudice. The second problem is that, as we were discussing before, that evidence is not relevant because it only went to the December 24th demonstration at Millennium Towers. As you were saying, Judge Millett, that December 24th postdated all of the unfair labor practices in this case. So even if Preferred had been able to show a secondary object on December 24th, that would not serve as an affirmative defense to actions it had already taken by that point. And even if the December 24th demonstration were relevant to even if Preferred's argument is that the December 24th, it would introduce evidence about the December 24th demonstration vis-a-vis its recognitional object defense, it's the same problem because the board already found that there is no evidence of a recognitional purpose, and that's a substantial evidence question. At any of the demonstrations, in its offer of proof, Preferred said that the 1224 demonstration had the same flyers with a similar message as the October and the November demonstrations. That's at JA 1969 through 70. And the Ninth Circuit already determined that that's the secondary versus primary. The Ninth Circuit already determined that those flyers were primary in nature. And the board, looking at the evidence in the record, also determined that there was no recognitional purpose. And so there's no recognitional purpose evidenced in these flyers, in the messages that were at October and November. Therefore, since it was the same in December, there was no recognitional purpose in December as well.
Tell you is we want a union,
sure,
not evidence of recognitional.
Or right.
Maybe this was organizational picketing.
Sure. So two things. One is that the chant... Well, that wasn't the complete chant. It said, we want a union, not corruption.
We want the union. Was it the union? Maybe it was whatever.
I don't remember if it was
a union. Union.
Yes.
Right.
Not corruption.
Okay.
So it's...
well...
yeah. So you look at the context. You look at the totality of the circumstances. What else was going on at these demonstrations? So yes, in that one chant, there was reference to a union. There were other chants that didn't reference a
union.
Lots
of SEIU... Signs.
Some of the signs had SEIU on them. Some of them didn't.
Okay.
You had the flyers, that the handbills that were passed out, those did not mention unions. There was some indication, there were some references to unions, but not everything was referencing unions. And even the references to unions, just because there is a reference to, or just because a union is on the scene, does not necessarily make it recognitional in nature. Again, looking at the totality of the circumstances, at the context, the focus of these demonstrations were on the working conditions at Preferred contracted buildings, the sexual harassment, the hours, the wages, those kind of things. And the union was helping them out. Local 87 was helping these employees address those issues. And that doesn't, however, make it a recognitional, an unlawful recognitional purpose. Because you look at, sometimes we say these words, recognitional purpose, organizational purpose, as shorthand. But look to the text of 8b7 and what it says. What is improper recognitional or organizational purpose is when the picketing has the object of forcing or requiring an employer to recognize the union, or forcing or requiring the employees to accept a union. So a reference to a union, or even saying some of the employees saying they want a union, doesn't get to that level of forcing or requiring recognition of that union by an employer, or forcing or requiring other employees to join up with that union. And, but, so those were kind of hitting the point where it is, but to make a bigger point about the we want a union line, sure. Preferred has another way to interpret that evidence. They think it shows a recognitional purpose. But ultimately, just because Preferred has its own interpretation of the facts isn't enough to displace a board decision on substantial evidence review.
So the question, I guess, for what the object of picketing is, was, is it an objective or subjective test?
Right. I think you're looking at objective factors because it's especially with on the recognitional point, you're looking at it from the perspective, I would say, of what an employer or other employees would think, because that's that kind of forcing and requiring the impact on those other parties. And so you're looking at what was said out loud, what was broadcast to the employers or to other employees. And that is more objective in nature, I would say. The other point on that is, right, so these...
So then is it just a legal question or is it a factual question what the object is?
It has been treated as a factual question.
Even if it's an objective test?
Right.
And what sort of a reasonable employer/employee would think?
I think so. I think this court has certainly applied it has applied the substantial evidence standard of review. I don't remember if offhand it specifically said it's a question of fact, but it has said substantial evidence review applies here.
It has to be a fact question if it's a substantial evidence question, right?
Yes, a question of fact.
What would a reasonable person in the context think? And you're asking the jurors to make, I mean, reasonableness sometimes can be legal, sometimes factual.
Okay.
And I guess you're saying here it's factual.
Right. That is how this court has been.
Employer here feel like they were being pressured into having a union? Would reasonable body of co-employees feel like they were being pressured to ask for a union?
I think that's right. I don't think it's about kind of what in its heart of heart Local 87 wants to happen. Because looking at the language in 8B7, what's talking about forcing or requiring, it's not talking about does the union hope that these unions will, or sorry, that these employees will join up with the union at some point. One other point I would say on the evidentiary point, which was the bulk of Preferred's argument here. So we've been over why the evidence in their proffer is insufficient. They say, well, they speculate that there would have been some additional evidence that might have come in on cross-examination. But the court's standard when reviewing these evidentiary issues is whether it clearly appears that the new evidence would compel or persuade to a contrary result. And the only way the court can answer that question is if it knows or at least has some indication of what that additional evidence would be. And Preferred doesn't offer any of that. That's why in Salem Hospital
Corp. We are hampered here. I mean, the upfront decision of the ALJ a couple of rounds ago
right. To
just flat out exclude their affirmative defenses. Is that defensible?
So I know that the ALJ did make that point about excluding evidence, but the ALJ also did address their defense on the merits. So it's not that the ALJ entirely excluded everything that has to do with these affirmative defenses.
Well, it's kind of saying, I'm not going to let you put your evidence in, but now I'm going to address your claims.
Right. I'll admit that that was a little odd. But again,
is it right? Is it wrong? Are you defending that?
I'm not defending here the ALJ's initial decision for the reason I think you said, because what's on review now is the board's decision. And the board decision saying in response to their request to reopen the record was to say, well, we've looked at it essentially. So you could essentially say, even if the ALJ...
fruit of the poisonous tree here. It's like, all right, we told you sort of a grand briefing level what we wanted to get in, but because of this upfront error, it just left the record bare, and we can't obviously create on round two before the board every jot and tittle of what our allowing us to put on the evidence of our affirmative defenses would have exposed.
Sure, it's not every jot and tittle, but they have to do something. And what all of they've specifically identified is this December 24th incident at Millennium Towers, and we've already talked about that. They haven't said whatever else they want to put in. And in the Salem Hospital Corp., the NLRB case that they cite in their reply brief, this court said that when an employer or a party fails to provide specific evidence of potential witnesses' testimony, we cannot determine that the excluded evidence was either relevant or material, much less how that testimony could persuade to a contrary result. So the court, the preferred hasn't given the court anything by which to make the determination that there has been an abuse of discretion, that there would have been a different result had they been able to put in additional evidence post-remand.
On the secondary picketing.
Yes.
If it was a matter of law that since it postdated all of the unfair labor practices, December 24th did the evidence by December 24th. If that were the basis for upholding the board's decision, could they then raise this issue again at compliance proceedings?
Well, at that
secondary picketing and say, as sort of a unclean hands. And same question for recognitional picketing.
Right. So it wouldn't go to the liability question at all. The question of whether they could bring it up on compliance is whether, like, the
pretty equitable proceeding if they just sort of said unclean hands.
But so what I guess what would they be making that argument in purpose of, that they were like
I'm just
cutting off of back pay or something like that? I mean, that would be a question.
You'd want to hire them after they threw coal at security officials on Christmas Eve. You can't make us hire people who violate criminal laws. I mean, I don't want to make their arguments for them.
Right.
Probably got way more sophisticated ones than I'm thinking. I'm trying to understand how this liability and compliance proceeding things.
Sure.
There's different ways of addressing this matter.
There are,
I could show later.
Yes. I think if the court rules solely on the timing issue, if they say the December 24th, we're not going to even look about whether that was secondary or whatever. We're just going to say it was too late. That is the sole basis for the court's decision. Then I think there might be some questions open on compliance proceeding as to whether that subsequent, you know, post-discharge actions has some impact on the remedy. Certainly not saying at this point that they would be successful, but they could raise those arguments. So same with the recognitional picketing, because the recognitional picketing, if I could just explain this, that also has a timing problem for them, because the recognitional picketing is only unlawful if it extends more than 30 days. And most of the unfair labor practices in this case occurred before the end of that 30-day period. So the 30 days started on October 29th. Most of the unfair labor practices occurred within that initial 30-day period. So even if it was recognitional picketing,
seems,
and I'll get to that.
An important word.
And I will get to that. But that's my first point. So even if it was recognitional in that first 30 days, it's still lawful. So that was most. As to the rest of the unfair labor practices that occurred after the 30 days, they still occurred before there was any additional demonstrations. So after November 17th, I believe it was, the next demonstration was on December the 18th. So that was the first picketing that was outside of the 30-day period. But all of the unfair labor practices had occurred before December the 18th. So even if December 18th, December 24th was recognitional, outside of the 30 days, all of the unfair labor practices already happened there. So they face the same timing issue as they do with their secondary.
What about the ones that were outside that initial 30 day period?
Yeah.
Called the protected period.
Mm-hmm.
There were some that were out, but I thought they were terminations that were because of the contracts canceled, which were canceled within projected 30-day period.
That's true. And so if you take it in that way, then everything occurred in the initial
30-day period. Is that right or wrong way to take it?
I don't think it matters because the timing is bad for them either way.
Right, just because I asked the question, is that the right way or the wrong way to take it?
So I guess you could say that
what does the law say about that? If you terminate a contract in this period, but then you don't effectuate the terminations of the individuals, the only assume it's a clean, clear decision that was only because of the contract cancellation. Yep. When does that mean the relevant unfair labor practice happened?
That I don't know. Not an issue that has been briefed. It was not raised by the other side, so I don't have an answer for you on that point. But again, I think it doesn't actually matter under the facts of this case, because either if you say, well, that happened when the contract was canceled in mid-November, or it happened when they were actually discharged in December 14th and 15th, it was still before any purportedly unlawful recognitional picketing. So because the unfair labor practices are on their merits undisputed. And because the affirmative defenses fail, the court should enforce the board's order.
Any questions?
I don't think so.
Any questions?
No.
Thank you very much, counsel. Okay. So we'll hear from the intervener now.
May it please the court, Bryn Johnson for intervener, SEIU Local 87. The 8 workers who were discharged have now been waiting more than 11 years for their remedy. Preferred's appeal doesn't contest the board's finding that those workers were fired for their participation in the protests and in order to chill further protests. The board was right not to reopen the record because the only evidence that Preferred seeks to put in is irrelevant to the remaining questions in the case. Because that evidence that Preferred proffered in its proffer to the board was only about the Christmas Eve protest.
Why were the workers chanting, "We want a union," if not for a recognitional purpose?
Yes, the workers were chanting, "We want a union, not corruption." And they were comparing what they, the help that they had received from the union with the exploitation and the corruption that they felt like they were facing from the employer, as evidenced by the rest of the signs and the flyers in that case that were all expressing the workers' concerns with their working conditions.
And on the publicity proviso issue, if the workers were informing the public they lacked a union, then is the protest automatically recognitional subject to the proviso, or can we still conclude the protest fell outside of 8B7?
No, you could still decide that the protest fell outside of AP7 because we want a union while accurately informing the public that the workers did not have a union doesn't necessarily indicate that the purpose of the protest was to force or coerce the employer in order to recognize a union for the workers. There was none of the traditional evidence of recognitional object present in this case. The union never made a demand for recognition or tendered a contract. Workers weren't asked to join the union.
All they did was walk around with signs that says, "We want the union." And that's all they chanted is, "We want the union." If that's the only thing happening, would your position still be that it wasn't association, organizational or recognitional?
If all the workers did was have the sign saying, "We want a union," and chanted, "We want a union," then I think it could be a reasonable conclusion that they did have a recognitional object. However, that is...
You don't have to have those other formal processes for it to be... You talked about there's no petitions filed, none of those things. So you don't have to have those things. Just the content of the demonstration itself can make it,
it
recognitional.
Could... Yes, that could be a finding that an ALJ could make that would be reasonable. However, that's absolutely not the evidence that is in the record here, in that the workers did not have any signs asking for a union. Their flyers and signs didn't mention asking for a union at all. And they weren't just chanting, "We want a union."
The union's name on a lot of them.
The union name was on there because the union was present, but it's well established that the mere fact that a union is present at a picket does not make it an organizational picket. Otherwise, the union could never have pickets at employers. They don't represent workers. But getting back to the chants, the workers weren't just chanting, "We want a union." They were chanting, "We want a union, not corruption," and many other chants as well that were all focused on their labor dispute with Preferred, including that Preferred buildings managers exploit workers. "We want justice. When do we want it? Now." So the overall context, and this is a totality of the circumstances consideration, shows that the workers' purpose of their protest was to highlight their labor dispute with Preferred. And the board reasonably found that. And because that's a reasonable interpretation of the evidence, that's all the court needs to decide this appeal, even if there are other reasonable interpretations. Judge Millard.
Why wouldn't the easiest way to sort of integrate all of the communications to say they were opposing these various unfair labor practices and they wanted a union because they had not been successfully able on their own by rebuffing the advances of the supervisor and the like to stop the practices? And it just seems like a natural way to read it is, yeah, we're opposed to this and this and this concrete thing. We want more money. We don't want to be harassed. And to that end, we want a union.
No, I don't think that would be the correct conclusion to draw in this case, because the NLRB expressly found And there was testimony in the record by the workers and the union president about what the communications between them were. There was no testimony that the workers asked to join the union or asked the union to represent them, or that the union indicated that it was trying to represent the workers. The NLRB found in page 12, at the end of footnote 19, that there was no evidence that the employees were seeking to be were seeking recognition or to be organized, or even that the union was attempt to organize them at that time. I believe I've used my 3 minutes unless there are any other questions.
Any questions? Good. Any questions? Right, thank you very much, Council. I'll give you,
Petko. Tough last name. Thank you.
Mine always gives me pronunciation. Okay, I apologize.
No problem.
We'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you. So just to start, because it's an easy answer, the statute answers your question whether you can go back and the prior picketing is insulated. If it's recognitional, the failure to file a petition after 30 days renders the entire period unlawful, unprotected. So it goes back to the day that they started.
The statute is pretty confusing in its language. What language do you think?
29.
Said it so explicitly.
Yeah, it's in our brief at page 8 in our reply.
No, I'd like to look. Let's look at the statute.
29 U.S.C. section 158 B7. Yeah.
All right. So where's the language there that says it officiates the whole thing?
The entire period of picketing.
Where does it say that? What language exactly? Can you read the statutory language? 158. Sorry, this is recognition. So on B7? Yeah, so B7. What language are you relying on that says that it vitiates the entire period?
That's my reading of it. You don't get a pass.
Where such picketing has been conducted without a petition under section 159C of this title being filed within a reasonable period not to exceed 30 days from the commencement of such picketing. But that, say that the difficulty there is you said it textually, the statute vitiated it. I find the language somewhat ambiguous in that regard.
If I could submit another brief on it. It's been established law that if the picketing is recognitional, it goes back to the original date.
What established? Where's that established?
It's in the statute. I mean, in any case.
Okay, I'm asking you the statute. So the statutory text here does not say that it officiates anything that went before, as I read it.
Failure to file petition after 30 days renders the entire period of picketing unprotected.
Is that in the statute? I'm sorry, I'm not seeing that. What's your site? Sorry. Did you find it? Do you have a site?
Yeah, I'm citing our brief, which is a paraphrase, but
okay, that's the problem with the paraphrase.
Yeah, I understand.
I'm looking at the statute itself now. Do you have a copy of the statute with you?
It's in the red brief at Romanet 1 and 2 at the end, addendum.
Thank you, Your Honor. The start of this section, unfair labor practice by labor organization, that's in B. And then it lists these things. It's an unfair labor practice
You want to go to number 7.
And picket or cause to be picketed an employer where the object is forcing or requiring the employer to recognize or bargain with a labor organization.
So that.
Unless. Labor organization is currently certified as a representative.
So it's unlawful. I think you want to come down to C, where such picketing has been conducted without a petition of this title being filed within a reasonable period of time not to exceed 30 days from the commencement of such picketing.
Right. It doesn't, I guess a better way to say it, it doesn't provide an exception that if your original picketing was lawful, and your later picketing is unlawful, there's no violation. What this statute says, you can't engage in picketing for a recognitional object or secondary object. Putting pressure on a radio station the tenants in the building that have nothing to do with the dispute and enmeshing them in the dispute. That's the secondary boycott, picketing prohibition. But either way, if it's secondary or recognitional, these are tough issues. That's the point of developing a full record. On an incomplete record without adequate cost of cross-examination, that's what Ozark said. It's not the offer of proof is not a substitute for live testimony and cross-examination. And just on the organizational, you know, we want a union. There couldn't be anything more recognitional than that. The president of the union, Olga Miranda, said,
"Do you dispute that it's the totality of the circumstances test?"
No, I do agree, but that's a big one. We want a union. How could that anybody anything? As Member Kaplan said, Chair Kaplan said, that is the epitome of a recognitional cry. It's an organizing cry. We want a union. How could you say it any more clear than that?
How many have to say it? How many times?
I don't think the law says, but president.
Well, I mean, I think you would agree if they were out there for a couple hours and
you can watch the video.
One person said
they were chanting.
I'm asking a legal question here because you said you can't. That's the epitome. You can't get any more important than that. But if one person said it once in a 2-hour picket and no one else did, that wouldn't matter so much, right?
Yeah, I would agree, Your Honor, with that. Yeah. If it was just what they were chanting it throughout, and it's on video. It's submitted. It's in evidence.
The record. It wasn't everybody.
The alleged discriminatees, the picketers, were chanting that. We want a union.
All of them said that? All of them are on video saying that?
All of them on the video that are making the chant. It's multiple people. I didn't go through and say, oh, did this person sit out? I mean, it was a group demonstration, noisy. They were all chanting the same thing. We want a union. Mm-hmm. We want a union. We want to be not recognized. Mm-hmm. Right. Not Donald. And that doesn't change it. I mean, we want our union. The president of the union said they're organizing our workers that we're organizing, our members.
So this is a fact question, I think. Do you dispute that this is a fact question? Right, we asked whether the object of the picketing is a fact question. Do you agree that it's a fact question what the object of the picketing was?
Absolutely, I do agree with that.
Right.
I just think
the circumstances of fact question. Right. So what you have to show is not that one could watch that video and come to that exact conclusion, that it was clear error or the equivalent of that super deferential review of fact finding by this court.
I understand your point, Your Honor, but I'm not here to retry the case, to re-argue the machinations of with a secondary. The point is due process. Give me a chance. Let me call my witnesses. Let me bring in my evidence. And the totality of evidence is all relevant, including, you know, what Member Kaplan, then Chair, said. Only the picketers would understand the gravamen of what they were truly communicating, not the public. They would not be apparent to the public that the employees were not represented by the union. That's why the publicity proviso does not apply here. And just one other thing I wanted to mention that's in the record that I forgot to mention in terms of what evidence you provided. There's also evidence in the first board decision, footnotes 3, 11, and 12. The judge.
That decision's been vacated.
Right. This is evidence that was excluded. The judge refused to admit evidence regarding, among other things, why the leaflets were drafted as they were and whether the picketers blocked access to the building. In other words, evidence that would have shown secondary activity, coercive activity towards the tenants. And that's what the Ninth Circuit said when it talked about general maintenance. It said the reaction of the tenants was relevant evidence because the union directly targeted the building's tenants and owners with coercive activity. And here, in contrast, they're talking about the preferred case. There was the union never engaged in coercive conduct targeting Harvest or any of the building's tenants. That's what they did at Millennium. You know, it worked in the first building. Let's go to the next one and let's ramp it up. Let's commit
way
violence.
Over your rebuttal time here.
I appreciate the time, Your Honor.
All right. Any more questions? All right. Thank you to both counsel. The case is submitted.